Hare Krishna. Okay, so today is Pandava Nirjala Kadasi, 7th of June, 2006. Okay, so yesterday we were talking about deities, and I just mentioned Prabhupada was telling us about how Radha Govindaji in Calcutta was his inspiration for beginning this movement. And he also mentioned about other deities that own property. And he gave the example of Ranganath in Vrindavan. He is actually the tenant of Radha Govinda. Govindaji is the landlord and Ranganathji is the tenant. So it's a nice arrangement. Actually, legally in India, deities can own land. They're recognized, you know, as personalities, and they actually have their own land holdings. They're very good. So Prabhupada had also mentioned about his childhood deities. He had these small Radha Govinda deities. After seeing the Radha Govinda deities in his neighborhood there, then he wanted deities of his own. And when he was about 5 or 6, his father bought him some small Radha Krishna deities. I think they were about 4 or 6 inches high, not bigger than that. Later on, Prabhupada gave those deities to his sister to look after, and she was actually worshipping them. She worshipped them her whole life, practically. And then later on, when she came to live in Mayapur, that was after Prabhupada's disappearance, those deities were put on the altar in our Mayapur Chandradaya Mandir. But unfortunately, when we were attacked by dacoits, they were stolen and we never recovered them. But anyway, Prabhupada mentioned to us one time, we were in Mayapur February 29th, 1976, and Pishima, Prabhupada's sister, Baba Tarini, we used to call her Pishima. Pishima means auntie. So she had come to Mayapur with Prabhupada, and she was insisting on cooking for him. That was her service that she liked to do. But she always cooked this really heavy stuff, and she liked to cook in mustard oil also. And Prabhupada's digestion wasn't, you know, so good. So after a few days, then Prabhupada got really annoyed because she was insisting on cooking. She wouldn't let anybody else cook, but he was having difficulty digesting it. So on February the 29th, Prabhupada refused to allow Pishima to cook for him anymore. After eating her lunch yesterday, he became ill and had to take rest at 8 p.m. He called her in and he told her that she had to return to Calcutta. She argued with him. Then Prabhupada shouted at her in Bengali and she became upset and started crying. He was telling her to go and she refused. Finally, she got up in tears and left the room. They have a very special transcendental relationship. Apart from being Prabhupada's sister, she even looks like him. Pishima is also an initiated disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Because she was Prabhupada's younger sister and she would always come to him for advice. And so he had that role that, you know, he was always telling her what she should do or what she shouldn't do and kind of guiding her. And she's the elder brother, so naturally, you know, in India at least the system is such that the elder brother is always in charge. So he was telling her, now you have to go back to Calcutta, and she didn't like that. She wanted to stay there. And Prabhupada got really angry with her and was shouting at her, and she was crying and answering back. And this exchange was going on. I was sitting in the corner in the back of the room there watching this, you know, exchange going on. And, you know, I was kind of not sure what to do or what not to do. I just sat there. So anyway, after Pishima went out, Prabhupada sat back and he started laughing. He was sitting on his asana. So he told me, he said, she should stay in Calcutta and look after their childhood deities. So that means this Radha Govinda deities that he had given her. He shook his head and laughed. She has some idea of traveling with me. She thinks I'm her brother. This is the problem. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, not because it changed him as a person, but to get away from the family. Generally, family members, they don't take instruction. I was the same person before taking sannyas as after, but I took sannyas for this reason. Otherwise, I could have done the same things without it. So, a bit of transcendental perspective there. But I understood that Prabhupada had given his Radha Govinda deities to his sister because she was having problems in her family life. The man that she married was not a strict Vaishnav. Actually, he was anything but. At least he was eating fish. That much we know. I had heard that he was a meat eater, regular meat eater. And he also, he was a drunkard and he had so many problems. So every now and again, Baba Trini would come to Srila Prabhupada and, you know, try to get some solace. And Prabhupada gave her his Radha Govinda deities to worship so that she would have some shelter in that difficult situation in her family life. So she did. She worshipped them very faithfully through her whole life. And later on, actually, her husband, as I heard anyway, when he got in his late 40s or early 50s, he had a change of heart and he actually rectified himself. And he came to his wife and begged her forgiveness, and you know, he was practically worshipping her because she, you know, by her strictness as a Vaishnav, she saved him, and he realized that later on. So there was a kind of a happy ending at the end there. At least that's what I heard. I never got it confirmed, but anyway. So another deity that Prabhupada had was when Prabhupada had left home, he had gone to Jhansi to begin his full-time preaching work, because he was always preaching, and he used to go, come and go, even as a householder, to Jhansi. And then later on, 1954, when he retired officially from family life, then he went to live in Jhansi for a couple of years, and he had this nice building, and in there he installed a very large deity of Lord Chaitanya. So on January the 19th, 1976, Prabhupada was sitting in his room relaxing. Myself and Madhavisa Swami were with him. And Prabhupada started telling us about his years before he came to the West, telling us something of the sequence of the major events of his preaching life. In 1950, he said he had left home. And in 1952, he lived in Jhansi. So I heard different versions. I also heard that he officially retired in 1954. So I think there was a transition period. He said on this occasion 1950, and I think he was coming and going at that point, but he was kind of halfway between, you know, Grihastha and Vanaprastha life. And then finally I think he made the formal break in 54. But anyway, he was living in Jhansi, he was preaching there. 1955 he went to Mathura and he gave his deity of Lord Chaitanya to Keshava Maharaja's temple in Mathura. So he had this very large deity of Lord Chaitanya, and he's still there. He's being worshipped in the Keshavji Gaudiya Math in Mathura. So Prabhupada put him on the altar there, and then when he left Mathura and moved to Vrindavan the following year, then he left his deity of Lord Chaitanya with the mat there, and he's still there even now. You can go on and see him. So then in 1958, he wrote Easy Journey to Other Planets. 1959, he took sannyas. 1960, he started the translation and commentary work of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In 1962, he finished and published part one. In 1963, he finished and published part two. 1964, he finished and published part three. And then in 1965, he left Calcutta for the USA. These evening conversations are always sublime. Just being able to sit with Srila Prabhupada and hear him speak so remarkably is so remarkably satisfying, especially when he recalls his young childhood experiences and the British rule in India and his efforts to spread Krishna consciousness. That was just very nice. Sometimes Prabhupada would reminisce about, you know, his earlier days, and he'd reveal things to us. And I mentioned that, of course, in those days we had no Prabhupada Lilamrita. There was no official biography. So anything that Prabhupada told us, little things, just like one time I was giving Prabhupada his massage, and I suddenly noticed that he had a scar on the inner part of his thigh, up at the top. And I saw that, and I kind of looked at it, and then Prabhupada told me the story behind that. And he said that when he was a very small boy, he had been playing in the alleyway at the back of his parents' house, and he had a box of matches, and he actually didn't know what matches were. So he was taking them out the box, and he was wearing a dhoti, one of these light cotton dhotis. So he was taking the matches out of the box and then rubbing them on the side, and then they would flare up. Of course, they would catch fire. And then he was just dropping them in his lap and then pulling another one out. So he didn't know because he was very small. And then all of a sudden his dhoti burst into flames. So he said, he didn't know what to do, but then all of a sudden, he said, this man suddenly appeared in the alleyway, and he ran forward and he ripped off his dhoti and saved him, and then carried him into the house. So he had a scar from that. But the way that he said it, and Shrutikirti told me that he told him the same thing, that he said that this man just suddenly appeared in the alleyway. It sounded like Krishna. Oh, not Krishna, but maybe just somebody that Krishna sent. Because apparently there was nobody there, but Prabhupada kind of made it a little bit dramatic, that he just appeared there out of nowhere practically, and just saved him, and then he went off. So he had that. Anyway, you could hear little stories like that. Prabhupada would tell us these, bits of nectar. And it was always very wonderful just to sit with him and, hear him talk about his original preaching efforts, etc. So another conversation we had about other deities, because they were the first deities we're talking about, Radha Govinda, and then Prabhupada's own Radha Govinda, and then this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then when Prabhupada began ISKCON, then his first deities, first big deities, of course, are here in London, Radha London Ishwara. So on January the 15th, 1976, we were in Calcutta, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj had come at the beginning of the month to be Prabhupada's secretary. So, of course, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was here in London when the Bury Place temple was opened and when the installation of Radha London Ishwara took place. So we were talking, again, just chatting in Prabhupada's room. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj recalled how Prabhupada had personally obtained the London deities, Sri Sri Radha London Ishwara. Prabhupada had been invited to London to officially open the temple, but the deities that had been ordered had not arrived on time. Only a few days before the proposed installation date, then the devotees had spotted some Radha Krishna Murtis in a shop window. Prabhupada immediately went to the shop and personally persuaded the owner, an Indian man, to let him have them. Even as he and the man spoke, Prabhupada ordered the devotees to carry the deities into a waiting van, and despite the man's hesitation. And then later, Srila Prabhupada settled everything very amicably with him. So I haven't put much of the detail there. I heard that somebody's writing a book now about the beginnings of the British Yatra. So hopefully you'll put all the details in there. But as I heard it anyway, because the devotees were in a panic, they'd sent all the invitations out for the opening of the temple, no deities. So they were looking, somehow or another, trying to figure out how to get deities. And then they heard that this man, what was his name again? Goyal, Mr. Goyal. Goyal. Doyle or Goyal? Goyal. Are you sure about that? G or D? D. All right, Mr. Doyle. Apparently, he had these deities, and they didn't want to. They got them for their some Indian association that they had, and they didn't want to install them because they saw some black streaks or dark streaks in the marble. I think on Radharani. Chip on a finger. So they had them anyway. Somehow the devotees came to know about them. And so Prabhupada said, take me there immediately, when it was reported to him. So when they went to see Mr. Doyle, Prabhupada went in, sat down, the deities were there, apparently, covered over with a cloth. And, of course, Mr. Dayal immediately wanted to talk about selling the deities to Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada didn't want to talk about the deities. He just sat down and he, you know, made some light conversation. How are you? Where are you from? How long have you been in England? And like this. So he's just talking, you know, about anything but the deities. So then after about 10 or 15 minutes, Mr. Dayal said, but, you know, Swamiji, what about, you know, you want to see these murtis? So then Prabhupada said, all right, let's see them. So he took the cloth off. And Prabhupada looked at them, but he didn't say anything. And Mr. Dayal was wondering, you know, what's Prabhupada thinking? And then Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said, just pick them up, see how heavy they are. So Tamal picked one up, and I think Shyamasundar was there, and he picked up the other deity. And Prabhupada said, all right, yes, very good, put them in the van. Mr. Dayal said, but Swamiji, we have to talk about, you know, and Prabhupada said, that's all right, it's very nice, thank you. And they walked out, and they put the deities in the van. Prabhupada got in the front, and Mr. Dayal, you know, is kind of standing there wondering what was going on, and Prabhupada drove off. And then they went down the road and turned the corner, and as soon as they went round the corner, Prabhupada said, stop. So they stopped the van, Prabhupada got out, he went in the back and offered his obeisances to the deities. So, and then they brought them back. So that's, you know, a brief history of Radha Landanishwara. The Prabhupada had some special leela with these deities, and they were the first big deities to be installed in ISKCON. So these reflections on his past struggles to establish ISKCON reveal just a hint of Prabhupada's inner, intimate, and to us, hidden relationship with their lordships. Srila Prabhupada's smiles and laughter at Tamal Krishna Maharaj's recollections made me wonder what kind of special leela he has with Sri Sri Radha Landanishwara. Prabhupada said that they are the best in the society, the first large deities to be installed. So later on, when we were on tour, we were in America and we went to New Vrindavan. And there was one devotee there, Kulashekhar Das, who had been one of the early recruits here in London. He was quite a character, Kulashekhar. A bit eccentric, as we say, a little wild. And he was the one that had fallen through the skylight during the Beatles recording session. He was kind of obsessed with, you know, getting some music published, and he wanted George Harrison to hear it. And apparently he found out where the Beatles were recording, and he had climbed on the roof, and there was a skylight, and he was looking in through the skylight, and he tipped over and fell through the skylight and landed in a heap in the floor in the middle of the recording session. And as they say, John Lennon just didn't bat an eyelid. He just looked at him and he said, I think that this one's for you, George. Anyway, that's Kulashekhar. He was quite a character. His father was a cab driver, and I think they were EastEnders. And his father actually did drive Srila Prabhupada when he had come to London, and Prabhupada liked him a lot, and he liked Prabhupada as well. So anyway, in 76 when we got there, this is June the 24th, we were in New Vrindavan, and Kulashekhar had moved from England, and he had joined, you know, the New Vrindavan Basis. So he is now producing the Bridge Basi Spirit, a magazine about New Vrindavan. Advanced copies are sent to His Divine Grace, and the last issue came whilst we were in Hawaii. So Kulashekhar came in for the afternoon darshan, bearing the latest edition, which he laid on Srila Prabhupada's desk. It featured a beautiful picture of Sri Sri Radha Vrindavannath, the deities of the original New Vrindavan farm. So they had two sets of deities, of small brass ones. They were upon what they called the old farm, and then they had Radha Vrindavan Chandra, which are about the same size actually as Radha Landanishwara. So they were on the cover, and Prabhupada looked at it very carefully, and he asked Kirtananda Swami to make arrangements for him to go up to the old farmhouse. So as soon as he saw the picture of the deities, he said, all right, let's go and let's see them. So we went there the following morning. So Kulashekhar Prabhu expressed his feeling that the main deities of New Vrindavan, Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra, Sri Sri Radha Landanishwara Ki Jai, were even more beautiful than Sri Sri Radha Landanishwara, the first set of deities to be installed in the society. But it seemed that he had a partisan purpose, and he was trying to get Prabhupada's support for his statement. So he was all enthusiastic, you know. Now he's in New Vrindavan, so he's become an advocate. So he, you know, he said, oh, you know, he was trying to be enthusiastic. He said, Prabhupada, I think Radha Vrindavan Chandra are even more beautiful than Radha Landanishwara, because he'd come from London. And there was this kind of competitive spirit, you know, amongst the temples in those days. And, you know, there was always this propaganda about New Vrindavan, you know, being, you know, it was the first farm and, you know, their deities were the best. Everything about New Vrindavan had to be the best. It was, you know, competition. So Kulashekhar had got caught up in the competition. So now he was, you know, expressing his new allegiance. You know, he'd left London and now he was in New Vrindavan. So he said this, and it was clear, you know, it was very obvious that he was hoping Prabhupada would say, oh, yes. But Prabhupada, you know, he kind of answered in a slightly different way. Prabhupada did say, oh, yes, Prabhupada readily agreed. But it was clear that he said it more to maintain Kulashekhar's enthusiasm rather than from his own conviction, because then he immediately modified it. He said, London, differently. Vrindavan Chandra is village beauty, and he is London beauty. He is town beauty. So he wouldn't say one or the other, but he said, you know, Vrindavan Chandra, village beauty, and Landanishwara, town beauty. Encouraged, Kulashekhar pursued his line of thought. I've not seen more beautiful anywhere than Radha Vrindavan Chandra. The jewelry? No, Prabhupada told him evenly. Everyone is beautiful, but everyone praises our London deity. Oh, but they haven't yet seen Radha Vrindavan Chandra, Kitnanandamaraj suggested. Prabhupada smiled, but he wouldn't be drawn. No, they've seen the picture. So then, of course, the following month, just a month later, 25th of July, Prabhupada had come to London. He was very sick the first few days that he arrived. He'd done a big initiation in New York just before we left there. And I think maybe about 200 devotees were initiated. And I noticed that whenever Prabhupada did big initiations, then he would immediately get some kind of sickness the following day, or, you know, within a couple of days. So in London, before we set off, I mean, New York, before we set off for London, then Prabhupada got a heavy cold. So actually, on the day that we left, the devotees had come to Prabhupada and asked him not to fly. Because if you have a heavy cold, then when you go up in the pressurized cabin and, you know, the air conditioning and everything, it can make you really, really sick. So Prabhupada said, no, the devotees are expecting me. So despite the fact that he was sick, he flew. And it was a night flight. Generally, they kind of lower the temperature, I think, on the night flights, just to help people sleep a bit. So when we arrived here in London the next morning, Prabhupada was very, very ill. He had spent the whole night lying down, just coughing up, you know, this heavy, heavy, thick yellow mucus. And he even actually asked Gurudas, who had flown over with us, to get him a wheelchair to get off the plane with. And Prabhupada was a very kind of self-sufficient person. He didn't like to take service from anyone if he could do it himself. He liked to do things himself. And he was quite happy doing things himself. But, you know, he took service from us, of course, to engage us in devotional activity. But, you know, generally he was kind of very self-sufficient. So for him to ask for a wheelchair, you know, it was very, very serious. As it was, you know, Gurudas went off to get the wheelchair, but he had to kind of walk a long way before he could find anybody from the airline to arrange it. So in the meantime, Prabhupada, you know, just decided he didn't want to sit on the aeroplane. So he got up, he got off, and he started walking down the corridor. Then Gurudas came running up, and he told Prabhupada, they'll give a wheelchair, but only at the aeroplane. So if you want to walk back, and we'd only gone about 50 meters. He said, if you want to walk back, we have to go back to the aeroplane entrance in order to get the wheelchair. But Prabhupada refused. and he just carried on walking. There is a thing about in India, if you start a journey, then you never turn around and go back. It's very inauspicious. If once you start moving forward, you keep on going forward. You don't turn around and go back. So, anyway, I don't know whether that was the reason or whether Prabhupada just didn't want to go back for other reasons, but he kept on walking. And as he was walking down the corridors, of course, Heathrow, the corridors are like miles long. And Prabhupada was literally swaying from side to side. And every 50 meters he would stop and just steady himself. I was walking right behind him just in case he had a problem. And the airport authorities sent two policemen to escort us. So they kind of kept at a discreet distance, maybe about 10 meters behind, and followed us all the way, you know, up to the immigration counter. We had a little incident at the immigration counter. Prabhupada was sick, so he sat down. I went forward with Prabhupada's passport and my own, and I gave it to this young man, and the guy kind of looks at me, and he was quite puffed up, and he looked at me, and you know, I had a British passport, so I had no problem. And then he took Prabhupada's passport, so he looked at it, and he said, so that's him, is it? And he looked over at Prabhupada. So I said, yeah. He said, okay. So he starts leafing through the passport. Now, Prabhupada had like a double passport. His original one was used up. And then he had a new one, which was attached to it. But his British visa was in the old one. So this guy's looking through, and he's going really slowly, one page at a time. And I knew he was doing it just, you know, to show me that he's in charge. So I just took it off him. You know, I wanted to get Prabhupada through as quickly as possible. And I just took it off him, and I opened it straight up to the visa, and I put it down and said, that's the visa. So he grabbed the rubber stamp and he shoved it in my face. He said, here. He said, why don't you stamp it too? Go on, stamp it. Oh, it was ridiculous. So I looked over and I saw these two policemen were still standing there, and they looked at this guy. And they kind of gave a frown, and then he, you know, he settled himself down again. So anyway, he stamped the visa, and he gives me back the passport, and then he smiles and he said, Ian, isn't he the guy that wrote the Bhagavad Gita? I was just amazed. I thought, this guy's a demon, and now he's, you know, he recognized Prabhupada was the author of the Bhagavad Gita. And I said, yeah, I said, he is. How did you know? He said, I got one on Oxford Street. So I said, okay, well, I said, he's going to be here for a few days and he'll be talking on the Bhagavad Gita at our place, you know, at Lechmore Heath near Watford. So, you know, please come. I thought, you know, he'll maybe redeem himself by coming, you know. So he said, okay, have a, you know, nice stay. And that was it. We came through. Anyway, Prabhupada was really sick. And for the first two or three days, he didn't have a program. On the way into the to the manor, of course, there was no ring road in those days. It was kind of like a very difficult route, and it was about an hour and 20 minutes or something. One Mr. Patel had lent his Rolls Royce, and on the way in, we had to stop twice, for Prabhupada vomited out the door. He was so sick. So when we got there, Prabhupada went straight to his room and took rest. And practically spent the first couple of days just in bed. Just had this really heavy flu. And he explained later on, when you're old, your blood is thinner. So it transforms to mucus much more easily. If you get too much mucus in your system, it blocks the heart, actually. So it's very dangerous. So on July 25th, we'd been there three days by that time. It was Sunday. So then Prabhupada suddenly decided it was a little better. Actually, it wasn't that much better. But he said, let's go to London. I want to go and see Radha Lundaneeswara. So that arrangement was made. And although he's still very weak and his respiratory tracts are thick with mucus, he went just to have the darshan of Sri Sri Radha Lundaneeswara. They were the first large deities that he installed in the West, and he has a special affection for them. Before we left, the devotees came in with the Observer newspaper, which carried a four-column article by Colin Cross on his meeting with Srila Prabhupada. Actually, it contained very little of Prabhupada's own words. It was mainly an essay on Colin's own impressions, interspersed with various facts about Srila Prabhupada and the movement. He described his interview as an unnerving experience, and his meeting with several shaven-headed devotees as oddly disquieting. But it was generally a favourable article, and at least it contained the whole Maha Mantra. His description of Harikesh gave us a laugh. Harikesh had just come back onto Prabhupada's party as his secretary. So this man gave this description of Harikesh. He said, "Eventually, His Divine Grace's private secretary, a monk with a face and manner that would not have been out of place at the Vatican, arrived to say that the moment for the audience had come." So Harikesh happens to be from an Italian family, of course, as well. So anyway, we drove into London. So on the way to London, I was thinking about the conversation that Prabhupada had had with Kulashekar the month before in New Vrindavan, and Prabhupada's unwillingness to declare that Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra were more attractive than Sri Sri Radha Londonishwara. So I asked Prabhupada if Radha Londonishwara were in fact his favourite deities, and Prabhupada said yes. So, because Krishna's Krishna everywhere, but you know, still Prabhupada had some special affection. So we arrived at Bury. Before we went to Bury Place, we came here to Soho Street, and at that time, this building was, you know, shut down. It had been a public house, and then it was closed up, and it was for sale. So we stood outside on the roadway there and had a look at it from the outside. And Jai Tirtha had, you know, he was the new GBC at that time, so he asked Prabhupada should we buy it, and because, you know, we had so many problems at Bury Place. They were trying to shut us down, and there was, you know, a lot of legal action going on there. So it was not known how long we would be able to stay there. So they brought Prabhupada here to see this building. So although he never entered into it, he did see it, and he did say yes, buy it. So, you know, that was the time. So there's been a tremendous push by the neighbours in Bury Place to have the temple closed down. But somehow or another, the devotees have managed to keep ahead of the city authorities and stay open. Prabhupada was very pleased to see how well the devotees were looking after the deities. After offering his dandabats and taking a little charanamrita, he sat on his vyasasan in front of their lordships, and he gave a talk encouraging the devotees to continue without being disturbed. Citing the examples of Prahlad Maharaj and Haridas Thakur, Prabhupada told his disciples to follow the advice of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. "You should always expect some obstruction by the demoniac party. That is not very astonishing. But still, we have to do our business and be tolerant. Be humble, be tolerant, don't be agitated, and then your business will suffer. This is Maya's kingdom. The test is always there. Combating is always there, and Maya's party is very strong. Especially at the present moment, in Kali Yuga, the atheistic persons are almost everyone." Describing the material world as a very dangerous place, Prabhupada advised the devotees to remain sober. They should stick to the spiritual principles, read his books, and avoid being discouraged. If the karmis were successful in having them evicted, Prabhupada said, Lord Krishna would certainly provide another suitable place. So here we are. But go on executing your routine work, Prabhupada said. I am very glad to see that you are taking care of the deities very nicely. Whenever I come, I see. So this is very encouraging. So God consciousness means that you have to face difficulty, but you should not be discouraged. You must go on with your business, then the success is sure. When there is a difficulty, the devotee thinks, oh, it is my good fortune that Krishna has given me some difficulty to counteract my previous bad actions. So in this way, if we live, then mukti pada sadaya bak. If one is not opposed by all these difficulties, and with determination he goes forward, then for him, going back home, back to Godhead, is guaranteed. Dayabak means it is inherited. just like the son gets the father's property, so there is no law to check it. And similarly, those who are humbly, tolerantly, going on with their Krishna consciousness, with full determination, for them, going back home, back to Godhead, is fully guaranteed. That was the 25th of July, 1976. Shri Shri Radha London Ishwara Ki Jai. So there you go, the inside scoop. Another deity that Prabhupada had a very special leela with was Sri Sri Radha Rasa Bihari. Who's from Bombay here? Anybody? No, Mumbai Wallace? No, okay. Anyway, but that whole episode in getting the land at Juhu Beach, that went on for several years. Tremendous fight. I don't think anywhere else in the movement Prabhupada had to fight as strongly as he had to there with the Juhu Beach property. First of all, he had to fight with the man that was selling it to us, Mr. Nair, because he was a crook. He had actually formerly been the mayor of Bombay, so he was a big man, and he had this prime property. And I heard that Prabhupada had actually seen that property sometime before he came to the West. He had been in Juhu, and he'd gone past there, and he'd seen it, and thought, you know, that would be a nice place to have a temple. Because, you know, our devotees, we all, I don't know whether you do, but I always, you see a big house or, you know, some castle or something, you think, wow, that would be a really nice temple. So apparently Prabhupada also, he saw this land. So then later on when he came back to Bombay, 1970-71 with the devotees, then he saw this land was up for sale. So at the time Prabhupada said, I didn't know this man was a cheater. He said, if I'd known he was a crook, I would never have, you know, negotiated with him. I would have looked for somewhere else. But he said, I thought he was a nice man. So he said, I can understand Krishna covered me over so that I would buy this land. Because once Prabhupada entered into the negotiation, that was it. He wasn't going to budge. And of course, Mr. Nair tried to sell that land to two other people at the same time. And, you know, he was thinking, Prabhupada's just some simple sadhu. He's got lots of rich Western disciples. So I'll just take his money, he took the deposit money, and then by some trickery, you know, cheat them out of the property, take it back, and then resell it once again. So he was actually trying to do that. So there's a huge fight with him. And then eventually, I think he died in February of 73. Prabhupada got the news when he was in New Zealand. Shudakirti Prabhu can tell you this story. He was with him. And Prabhupada got the news. Tusta Krishna took a phone call from Giriraj Maharaj, who rang from Bombay to inform Prabhupada that Mr. Nair had died. He had had a heart attack. And Giriraj said that when they got the news, he immediately bought lots of sweets and went out and distributed sweets to everybody to celebrate Mr. Nair's demise. So Prabhupada also, when he was told the news, he said, oh, very good, Krishna's mercy, you know. He said, and then he admitted, he said, actually, he said, I was praying to Krishna that he would remove this man. He said, as a Vaishnava, he said, we do not pray like this. But he said, he was giving us so much trouble. He said, and I wanted that place for Krishna. So he said, this is very good. Anyway, so we were in Bombay. And this was on December the 17th, 1975. We had gone on a morning walk. Prabhupada liked to go and walk down Juhu Beach. Very nice, long, straight, flat beach. And only 5 minutes practically walk from our temple. So every morning he would go. And there was one Dr. Patel that used to come and join him on his morning walks. Dr. Patel was quite a character. He was a really rambunctious, very loud person. Smaller even than Prabhupada, about 5 foot nothing. And very much full of himself. And he had a very loud voice. And he had seen Prabhupada walking down the beach with his disciples, Western disciples. And he was also, he used to go for a morning walk every day. So he'd come up and introduced himself. And then from then on, whenever Prabhupada was on the beach, Dr. Patel would come and join him. And he would get into these quite sometimes heated arguments, you know, on philosophy. He used to read the Bhagavatam and Gita. He knew Sanskrit, actually. And he would get into these debates with Srila Prabhupada, and sometimes, you know, he would just be so full of himself, he would cut Prabhupada off and, you know, make his point. And but eventually, after several years, you know, he gradually became converted from being a Mayavadi into being a Vaishnav. Just, you know, he began reading Prabhupada's books, and Prabhupada was always able to defeat him, and he respected that. But anyway, you know, his relationship with the devotees was a little bit acrimonious because of the way that he dealt with Srila Prabhupada. And also, he liked to insist on being respected, you know, by Prabhupada's young Western disciples. And of course, they didn't have that much respect for him because of the way that he would get into these arguments with Srila Prabhupada. So it was a kind of funny relationship. But anyway, Dr. Patel, he was a nice man, actually. It was just, you know, he was a very passionate guy. So we were walking back to the temple, and Dr. Patel, there was another group of men that came walking up. So Dr. Patel called them over, and he introduced one such admirer to Srila Prabhupada as being a renowned poet from Dwarka. His name was Betai, which means coming from the Dwarka Bet. So Bet means place. So Dr. Patel mentioned that Mr. Betai only wrote poems about God. Prabhupada good-humoredly quoted a Bengali poem that wherever one finds himself, he should neither perform religious acts nor sinful ones. He should simply always remember the lotus feet of Krishna. This prompted Dr. Patel to voice a complaint about how our pujaris dress the temple deities. "Sir, lotus feet, these people are actually putting such long varga," it means the dress. "I am trying to see the lotus feet of God here, Archa Vigraha. Well, I'm unable. Instruct them to put up the varga a little so that we can have the darshan of his sacred feet. Please tell them, too long vargas, you simply can't see anything." So he was having a go at Prabhupada's disciples again. Giriraj patiently explained that the deity's feet can always be seen throughout the day, but when they wear their night clothes, their feet are not visible. Since Dr. Patel only comes early in the morning, when the deities are still in their night outfit, he never gets to see Krishna's feet. There seems to be a mild acrimony in Dr. Patel's dealings with the devotees. It behaves as if he ought to be given some special entitlement by us as a learned and elderly person, and he tries to play off his relationship with Srila Prabhupada to extract some special attention. At any rate, in this instance, Prabhupada didn't take the matter too seriously. His mind was working in a different way. Whether the Lord's feet were visible or not, he was content that after the long, hard struggle to establish the temple on Hare Krishna land, their lordships are still with us. Prabhupada's response to Dr. Patel's complaint was thus full of gratitude and appreciation. How he has come to sit tight and call everyone to come and see him. The municipality came to drive him away. For several years, Prabhupada has fought on Sri Sri Radha Rasa Bihari's behalf. The previous owner tried to cheat Prabhupada of the land, while the municipality had presented severe objections to establishing a temple. At one time, they had even half demolished the deity's temporary shelter. They had burned the roof support poles with oxyacetylene torches, and they had carried the protesting devotees off in a police truck. They even went so far as to begin ripping off the roof of the deity room with Radharasa Bihari still inside. It was only a last second intervention by a few favorable people in local government that prevented the total destruction. So there was a whole fight, I mean literally a fight that was going on there. And I got more information about that from Mr. P.L. Sethi. He was one of our first life members in Bombay, Punjabi man. And he had a place in Chandigarh. He also had a place in Juhu Beach. And he was a building contractor. So when Prabhupada finally got the Juhu Beach property settled up, then he wanted, you know, obviously to have the devotees move on. But the six apartment buildings that were on there were all fully occupied by tenants. So Prabhupada decided to build an extra floor on top of each building. There were two stories, so he built a third story on the top. So the person that he engaged to do that was this Mr. P.L. Sethi. So when Mr. Sethi met Prabhupada, he became very attached to him, and he began to regard him as his guru. So Mr. Sethi, he had this place in Chandigarh, and in 1976, Chaitya Guru, who was also a Punjabi devotee, he had gone up to Chandigarh to open up an ISKCON center there, and so he was allowed by Mr. Sethi to use his house as a temporary ISKCON temple until they could get some land. And then they invited Srila Prabhupada to come up and do a 5-day pandal. So that pandal was held. We went up there on October the 15th. We were up there on October the 15th, 1976. So Prabhupada was holding a darshan in the living room of Mr. Sethi's house. And Mr. Sethi was sitting there, you know, next to him. So Prabhupada began to praise Mr. Sethi. He's a Punjabi, and the Punjabis are famous for their Kshatriya traditions. While Mr. Sethi humbly listened at his side, Prabhupada told us about his bravery during the days of the partition and Indian independence. In the conflict between Hindus and Muslims, there were many acts of terror and unprovoked attacks. Sethiji had a sword which he used to carry for self-defense. One time, he was walking along a road and several Muslims suddenly jumped down from a carriage and came running at him with knives in their hands. Sethi whirled his sword and in one blow lopped off the head of the leader. The hapless fellow's headless trunk continued to run down the road for several meters before falling into a ditch, and the rest of his would-be assailants ran in fear of their lives. Prabhupada told us this story in the darshan. We also had the same reaction. Whoa, you know. We looked on in wonder at the thought of the ghastly scene, and Prabhupada's eyes opened wide in emphasis as he described the bravery of Mr. Sethi. Yes, he said, this is Kshatriya. Prabhupada also told us that the establishment of the Juhu Beach Temple was accomplished only after a great struggle, and that Mr. Sethi had played a significant role in that. At one point, the wife of the former owner of the land, Mrs. Nair, had enlisted the Bombay Municipal Corporation through one of its members, Pushpakant Matre, to issue a demolition order on the temporary temple. A large team of police and demolition squad had invaded the land, and while the police dragged away the protesting devotees, they began to dismantle the entire structure. Just as the demons were ripping off the roof of the deity room with Radharasa Bihari still inside, the demolition was stopped by the intervention of Bal Thackeray, the leader of the Shiv Sena party. They're like a local extreme right-wing Hindu party who happened to be friendly to the devotees. Mr. Sethi had come there later on for darshan and was informed of the demolition by Giriraj Prabhu. He was also told that the court had granted permission to rebuild the temple, but that it had to be done that very day, which was a Sunday, because another high court hearing was scheduled for the following morning, on Monday morning, to finally decide the issue. So then, you know, the next morning they would apply for a stay order or a status quo. That means that whatever the situation is at that moment, it remains that way until, you know, whatever issue is there is finally decided by the court. So, you know, they had to basically rebuild this temple that night. Sethi got there in the evening for darshan, and, you know, so the whole structure was kind of ripped up and collapsed. And Giriraj told him, we have to rebuild this before Mangalati tomorrow morning. Right? So Mr. Sethi immediately assured Giriraj that he would reconstruct the temple that very day. Despite everything being shut, because it was a Sunday, Mr. Sethi managed to arrange for all the necessary materials from his own construction site, plus a team of labourers, masons and painters. He began work at 9 p.m. in pouring rain. Mr. Sethi recalled how Lord Krishna had protected the inhabitants of Vrindavan from the devastating rainfall sent by Indra by lifting Govardhan Hill, and so he was unperturbed. He was thinking, Indra wants to test me? All right, if you come down, you can come down more heavily, but I have the blessings of Srila Prabhupada. I have a temple to build, and I will. So at 11 p.m., He was challenged by the demolishers, who had threatened to send 150 gundas to stop the work. Mr. Sethi took out a rifle, and with his son Brij Mohan, who was armed with a pistol, he defiantly told them, "Let them come. They are 150, but we have 200 bullets." And both of them stood waiting, but nobody came. Working throughout the night, they had the temple completed by 4 a.m. in time for Mangal Arati. Later that day, Justice Nain issued the court's verdict that what is built, and no one can demolish it. It was a great victory for Srila Prabhupada, who was extremely appreciative and praised the bravery and service of Mr. Sethi to his movement. So, and Prabhupada told us that when this fighting was going on, he had gone to Radharasa Bihari and he had prayed to them that he said, "My dear sir," he said, "I've called you now to come on this land, and if you now just kindly sit here and don't move, I promise you I'll build you a big temple." So Prabhupada made that prayer to Radharasa, made a promise to Radharasa Bihari, and so it was done. And of course the temple was open, but unfortunately it was a month after Prabhupada's disappearance. But at least Prabhupada did get to see, you know, the big temple almost completed, but not quite, with the deities moved in on the new altars. But anyway, so there was a history there. So this was Prabhupada's fighting spirit for the on behalf of the deities. So another, I think this is also about Radharasa Bihari. September the 11th, 1976, we were in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada had met with Saurabh, Dhananjaya, Harikesh, and Bhagatji. Bhagatji was a local man that was helping with the temple. Saurabh, of course, was the designer of the Vrindavan temple and the Bombay temple. And they were discussing, they were working on building the Bombay temple. And Saurabh inquired whether he should design the singer stands in Bombay so that they could be used for bathing the deities whenever there was a festival, or whether he should make a special arrangement for bathing the deities at the opening of the temple. Prabhupada told him that bathing the large deities should be a one-time affair, just at the installation opening. But he said generally only small deities or the Shalagram Shila are bathed, you know, for festivals. Harikesh and Dhananjaya said that on Janmashtami and Balaram's appearance day, Nittai Das had organized for the big deities in Vrindavan to be bathed. "Terrible speculation," Harikesh said. Prabhupada shook his head in irritation. "Therefore the color has faded," he said, adding, "He is a rascal." This was Nittai Das. Harikesh recalled that he understood that the big deities were never to be washed directly, and even if they were to be covered with a plastic bag. "Why did you allow?" Prabhupada asked Dhananjaya. "Just see, this is the disease. Rascals, they do not know." In response, Dhananjaya said, "But everybody was listening to him. He was posing himself as the most learned in deity worship." "Huh, that he is fond of," Prabhupada wryly observed. Dhananjaya added that Nittai was introducing deity worship standards from the Hari Bhakti Vilas. "His idea is that we would become the most famous temple for bathing big deities in Vrindavan." Harikesh, however, pointed out that in the Hari Bhakti Vilas it states that a smaller set of deities should be used for the bathing functions. Prabhupada tipped his head, adding that the bathing was not to be done on the singer stand. "The deity is taken out, then it is done. But that is very risky. You cannot do it. So don't allow him. He is simply posing himself as very learned above everything. That is his ambition." Actually, Nittai had just left ISKCON. He rejected Srila Prabhupada, and he sent a very blasphemous letter to Srila Prabhupada about why he was leaving. He had been Prabhupada's personal servant just a year before. So anyway, he was, you know, coming in with all these different things, different from what Prabhupada had originally told us. So Prabhupada said that's his ambition. He's posing as a learned scholar, that's all. Reading books and making out that he knows more than his guru. Returning to the discussion of the Bombay opening, Prabhupada told Saurabh that the same priests who did our Hyderabad temple functions should be invited, and that they would therefore decide the exact arrangements. He said that the deities were not to be bathed on the altar, but rather in front. But if it's risky, you should not do, he said. Big deity? We've got the big deity? Yes, Hari Kesh confirmed. They're very heavy. Radharasabhi Hari. And Prabhupada asked what had been done in Hyderabad, because we'd just opened the Hyderabad temple at Janmashtami of 76. And Hari Kesh replied that the small deities had been bathed there. Anyway, Prabhupada said, we should not take risk at any rate. Hari Kesh added that Sri Sri Radharasabhi Hari had been moved to three different locations, causing great anxiety for the pujaris, because Srimati Radharani already has a slight crack in her left arm. Prabhupada again admonished the devotees, this risk should not be taken at any gain. Never mind Hari Bhakti Vilas, this Vilas, no risk. You must always know, no risk. That is the first point. Then we shall consult Hari Bhakti Vilas. Nobody can give reference to Hari Bhakti Vilas at risk. That, no, not at all. So, that's a bit about Radharasabhi Hari. What time do we finish? Now? Okay. Okay, so we'll continue on this evening. 5:30? 5:30 till 7. And we'll hear something about New Delhi's deities, Sri Sri Radha Paratasarati. Does anybody have any quick questions before we finish about deities? No? Everybody's yes.
In the beginning you were mentioning that property can belong to deities, but then there was a situation with the original Bhaktivinoda Thakur's deities, Radha Madhava, they were stolen or kept in secret in order to, that the man who did that, he wanted to take the land for himself.
Uh-huh.
So, is there any system to, assure that this is not happening, because it's risky? Somebody may take it.
What happens if somebody steals the deity so they can claim the deity's property? That's the question. I don't know. Short and sweet. I have no idea. I mean, if the deities disappear, what do? You replace them with other deities. But it depends on, the honesty of the pujaris and, whoever is managing the land on behalf of the deities. I'm sure it goes on. We went to, Prabhupada went to Panihati in early February of 77. And there was the original house of Raghava Pandit there. Prabhupada was being offered the land there to take it over and develop it. So we'd gone and inside Raghava Pandit's house, I saw there was a deity of Krishna, but no Radharani. And I was kind of puzzled by that. So later on when we left to go back to our temple in Calcutta, I asked Srila Prabhupada, how come there's only a deity of Krishna there? And Prabhupada said, because Radharani was stolen. Some thieves had come and stolen the deity. And I couldn't figure out why would they steal a deity. And then, it's explained to me that they melt them down and sell them for scrap metal. So this is the condition now, unfortunately.
In India, the system, you steal some deity from somewhere, you install somewhere, the deity has more influence, is what they believe.
What's that? If they steal the deity?
The deity somewhere, and if you install in some other places, those deities have more influence to attack the people, that's what they believe.
Alright. Well, anyway, some folklore there. Yeah, Krishna always has influence wherever he is. It's not that otherwise, if that were a fact, then everybody could go around stealing deities and putting them somewhere else, and then that would make them more popular. Doesn't sound very logical. Anyway, there's lots of folk tales. There's some folk tales. Yeah, but what Shastra says, that we have to see. Okay, so we'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Landanishwara ki jai.
Jai.